You know how everyone always says that President Biden does not support oil drilling? Well, it turns out that is fake news. The Biden administration has just approved $500 million for a new oil drilling project. There's only just one problem. The project is in Bahrain. You cannot make this stuff up. Meanwhile, Biden has either canceled or delayed more oil leases, more oil drilling projects on U.S. soil than any president in history. And that is the Biden playbook. Let's shut down oil production in the United States and help the Arabs and Putin become these wealthy oil tycoons. So don't believe, by the way, the fake news that America is manufacturing a record amount of oil. Because while that is true, that is happening despite Biden's policies, not because of them. I'm going to explain all that coming up. We will, of course, get to Chuck Schumer's vicious comments in just a moment. President Biden once again has been caught using a cheat sheet. This time, they don't just have the names of the people that Biden was meeting with, but the cheat sheets include the pronunciation of the names and their pictures. Yeah, literally the pictures to go along with the names. On Friday, Biden hosted the Prime Minister of Ireland, and there's a photo that shows Biden holding these cheat cards. It includes a picture of the Irish Prime Minister and other officials at the meeting. It includes their names, the pronunciation of their names, and it identifies the meeting as an official working visit with Biden. So Biden is getting the full kindergarten treatment. I wonder if there's a cheat sheet that reminds Biden like what he ate for breakfast. At this point, Biden uses a teleprompter when he asks his wife to pass the salt. He uses a teleprompter. You can't make this stuff up. All right, two big wins for Trump in the courts this week. All four Trump criminal trials are imploding as we speak. All of them have had massive delays, and there are a lot of questions surrounding them. And the reason is because most of the judges in these cases, not all of them, but most of them recognize that the charges are a complete farce. So we'll give you all the updates on the four Trump criminal trials coming up. Stunning new poll numbers show that Biden's support among Black and Hispanic voters is plunging. It is plummeting. It turns out, yes, Blacks and Hispanics also buy groceries and fill up their cars with gas, and they also want a secure southern border. Yes, even the Hispanic voters who are living in this country, in fact, they care more about it than perhaps anybody because they live in these neighborhoods where these illegals all gather around and commit crimes. But yeah, Blacks and Hispanics are just like white people. They want a strong economy and a secure southern border, so we'll get to that coming up. All right, Chuck Schumer, what an absolute disgrace. What a total sellout. And let me just say this to those people who are surprised Schumer's been such a strong friend of Israel. How could he do this? How could he throw Israel under the bus? I'm also surprised. I'm surprised that it took Schumer this long to throw Israel under the bus. I mean, Schumer equated Bibi Netanyahu with Hamas, calling them both obstacles for peace. This was orchestrated, we now know, in cahoots with the White House, because Biden admitted that in a moment of candor. I'm sure his people are not too thrilled, but he did. So I'm tired of people saying that Schumer has been a close friend. Schumer suddenly turned on Israel. This is not like what he's been doing all these decades. Biden and Schumer, I'll say it again and again, they are not friends of Israel. It's like saying, oh, well, he was such a good friend until he punched me in the nose. But until then, he was a really good friend. We just have a little hiccup. You know, he humiliated me in public, but he's been such a close friend until that point. It makes no sense. And those who suggest that Schumer's being inconsistent, he's being very consistent. Okay, what do you mean? He's been so strong, so supportive of Israel, and now he turned on Israel. How's that consistent? It's extremely consistent. Schumer cares about one thing he always has. He cares about Schumer. He loves the PR. He's never met a television camera that he didn't run toward like a power, like a super magnet. So Schumer always does what's best for Schumer. Until now, he's been a New York Democrat senator, so it's been beneficial to him to be pro-Israel, to get the Jewish vote, but now he has a much bigger issue with the Democrat Party, with the Muslim vote. So he's doing what's best for Schumer. Extremely consistent. We'll get to more of that. Mike Pence says he will not endorse President Trump. Wow, because Mike Pence, his reasoning is his conscience won't let him endorse Trump. Now, does this come as a surprise? It does not come as a surprise, but it's a very creepy thing to do. And it's, you know, you gotta love the fact Mike Pence is saying that it's his conscience that's forcing him to not support Trump, which means his conscience is forcing him to renege on his written pledge when he participated in the Republican debate. He had to sign a pledge like all these candidates, and we questioned that at the time. So am I surprised? I'm not surprised. But does this expose the fact that Mike Pence, you know, you ask your average person out there, Mike Pence is much more upstanding, much more dignified, has much more integrity than somebody like Trump. I'm sorry, I don't call this dignified, I don't call this integrity. The fact that not only, you want to tell me, give him a pass on the fact that he's not supporting the Republican candidate. You know what? Okay. His conscience doesn't let him support the Republican candidate. You can't always force a person to do what's best for the party. But that's not the issue. The issue is when he signed the pledge, he knew exactly what he was getting himself into. Everybody knew that Trump was dominating in the polls and that Trump was certainly the most likely candidate, even if it wasn't a sure thing like we thought. But you gotta love that Pence. Then he's blaming his conscience. He's saying, well, Trump is not conservative enough on abortion and on China. I mean, can you get a little bit more creative? Trump not conservative enough, not tough enough on China. He's not strong enough on abortion. The man who literally single-handedly overturned Roe v. Wade. He had the courage to put into place conservative Supreme Court justices who were really conservative, not like Justice Roberts, who was put in by George Bush. So, I mean, it's so bizarre what Pence is trying to claim here. And we know that's not the issue. We know it's all about January 6th and what happened and how Trump expected Pence to support him and Pence refused to do that. But the point is not, the point is, well, how can you tell him to support somebody he doesn't like? I'm not telling him to do that. He never should have debated. He has zero integrity. He intentionally lied. He knew when he signed that pledge, but he did it to advance his own political ambitions. And then as a typical politician, he's blaming his conscience. He has that audacity. And then he should be kicked out of the Republican Party because if you sign a pledge and you're part of the party, the party's the one running the debate, and you literally backtrack and renege and retract on your pledge and do not keep your pledge, then why should you? What good is it? It's worthless. That means there's no consequences to any of these pledges. So they should actually give him this consequence for hurting the party. All right, new text messages have surfaced showing that the CIA was spying on MAGA protesters at the Capitol on January 6th. This is a bombshell. We'll bring you those details. On Thursday, Biden went to Michigan for a campaign event. Biden visited a mansion on Thursday. He stood there at the porch on the way out, and he said, can I take a couple of questions from the crowd? And immediately, this is on video, immediately Biden staffers started shuffling the reporters back to their car. I guess Biden was taking questions from the people in the crowd, not from reporters. And as soon as he said he's taking some questions, his staff jumped into action. One conservative journalist put out a tweet saying, quote, the moment Biden suggested taking questions, his handlers come flying in like Secret Service agents taking a bullet, yelling at the press to get back in their cars. And by the way, they're not worried that he's going to say something foolish, that he's going to have a brain freeze. That's not their real fear. Their real fear is, we told you this, he has no filter. They're afraid that he actually might tell the truth. That's their fear with Biden. Not that he's going to say something senile or in cognitive decline, as much as his cognitive decline takes away his filter, which he never really had much of a filter to begin with. And he might admit that they're trying to get illegals to vote for him and harvest the illegal vote, mail-in ballots, and that he got millions of dollars from China. All right, so let me reiterate. Let's get into Chuck Schumer's vicious, heinous, disgraceful comments. How is it possible that Hamas commits a horrific massacre? Hamas slaughters women, children, babies, Rahman al-Islam. They're still holding so many hostages. They're holding American hostages. And yet the world is sitting there putting enormous pressure, trying to force Israel to surrender. People like Chuck Schumer and Biden and these Democrats. Israel is, question somebody asked me is, why now? Why is Schumer suddenly getting up and doing this now? And why Chuck Schumer versus other Democrats? I'll explain all of that. And I understand he's the Senate leader, but that's not the real reason. But Israel, they're accusing Israel of genocide. Literally, Israel is the victim, 100% the victim. Israel right now is in so much worse of a negotiating position, of a position amongst the world, global standing, than they were on October 6th. And it makes absolutely zero sense. They were the victims. They were victimized. Imagine if America, after 9/11, was suddenly put under enormous pressure and suddenly accused of genocide following 9/11. It's insanity. This is insanity. Prior to the attack, nobody was pressuring Israel except for Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and now they're genocidal because they were victimized by the worst terror attack in Israeli history. So Chuck Schumer made these comments. He calls for new elections in Israel. Calling for new elections, he's equating Netanyahu with Hamas. And then he says, well, but I'm not really equating them, in the same breath when he's equating them. And by far the best tweet in response to Chuck Schumer was the Mossad satire account. There's a satire Twitter account that's called the Mossad. It's not really the Mossad, at least it's not supposed to be. Maybe it really is the Mossad, but it's officially satire. And they say, What does he want? Israel, new elections. Israel has had like 57 rounds of elections in the last 2 years. And the truth is, since 2019, Israel has had 5 rounds of elections. Israel has more elections than all the other countries combined. The most recent election, after there were a bunch of like stalemates, Netanyahu won overwhelmingly. So putting aside, how dare Schumer intervene in Israel's elections? I mean, why doesn't Schumer try to intervene in Iran's bogus elections and Russia's bogus elections? No, he doesn't do that. But he intervenes in Israeli elections, which are by far the most democratic on the planet. And they've literally had more elections than you could imagine. Caroline Glick, she's an Israeli a columnist, and she put out the following tweet, quote, "If someone told you on October 6th that Hamas was about to sadistically slaughter 1,200 Israelis, wound thousands, seize 250 hostages, and then they told you that the United States and Europe would respond by standing with Hamas, would you have believed them?" She literally responded this after, you know, put out this tweet after, in response to Chuck Schumer's vicious, vicious, disgraceful comments. So here's what Schumer did. He identified 4 obstacles to peace. Many of you are aware of this already. Here are the 4 obstacles to peace. 4 obstacles, all equivalent. But they're not equivalent, but they're the 4 obstacles. Netanyahu, the radical right-wing Israelis that are part of Netanyahu's coalition, those are the first 2, Hamas and PA leader Mahmoud Abbas. Okay, so Netanyahu is the obstacle to peace. Netanyahu, the obstacle to peace, and is in a group, literally, with 2 terrorist leaders who have murdered thousands of Jews. And by the way, Mahmoud Abbas has reimbursed, they've reimbursed millions of dollars to the families of terrorists, including terrorists who carried out the Hamas attack, the Simchas Torah Shmini Atzeres attack. So Schumer is equating the terror leaders here and the people, the pay for slay leaders and Hamas, the worst terrorist, most vicious, horrific monster terrorists on earth, to Bibi Netanyahu and his right wing coalition. And look, like I said, I've never considered Schumer a friend of Israel. Excuse me, the speech exposes that for 40 years, Schumer has only cared about Schumer. We knew this, but a lot of people did not. And I'm curious, a lot of Jewish voters out there, the secular Jews, how are they going to respond? You think now the secular Jews who vote Democrat, that is like their religion, that is like more important to them and a bigger priority than almost anything in their lives. You think they're going to wake up and say, oh, wow, Schumer is now siding with Omar and Tlaib. Schumer's now siding with Hamas. Maybe it's time to abandon the Democrat Party and vote Republican. Forget Trump. These people wouldn't vote for DeSantis. These people wouldn't vote for Nikki Haley. These people cannot stand Republicans. They'll still figure out a way to somehow justify and rationalize this, which is insane, but we know it's going to happen. Other than, of course, I'm not referring to, of course, the Frum Jews and the Jews who recognize that the Republicans are our friends, the Democrats are our enemies. But, you know, Schumer, it's all about the Benjamins. It's all about the votes. He's never changed. He has no core. It's all about him. They need Muslim support right now. So like I said, he's been very consistent. I mean, Schumer has proven he cares about the Jews and about Israel as much as he cares about Bangladesh. So now the big question is why Schumer? Okay, and the answer is very chilling, actually, because Schumer is the token Jew. That's really why, Biden on Friday and in the White House speaking to reporters, he said, oh, yeah, we were aware of Schumer's comments. Schumer alerted us, our staffers, about the comments he was going to make. And he and Biden reaffirmed his support. He said, well, Schumer's expressing the concerns of a lot of people in America. So Biden clearly liked and was in cahoots with Schumer and they colluded together. And the reason is, you know, they asked, Democrat Congresswoman Debbie Dingell from Michigan, they asked her on CNN, what do you think of Schumer's comments? She said back, well, Chuck Schumer is the highest ranking Jewish official, Jewish politician in the United States. So if he is saying this about Israel, then obviously it has credibility. Can you believe it? This was orchestrated with the White House. Okay, the White House right now, they are hemorrhaging Muslim voters. They are hemorrhaging Democrat voters because they're being accused of being complicit in genocide. So what do they need? They need the Jew. They need Chuck Schumer, the Jew, to bash Israel, because then that'll show that the Democrats are standing with Hamas. So the Democrats are saying, well, if a Jew said it, how could I go after Chuck Schumer? He's one of them. And so they're literally weaponizing Chuck Schumer's Jewishness against all of us. How egregious is that? That is why they chose him being Jewish. And it's amazing because when we say they're anti-Semites for supporting terrorists, they say, no, we're not anti-Semites. We're anti-Israel, but we're not anti-Jewish. But now they can use Jewish and Israel to be equated. Oh, well, Schumer's a Jew. So that makes it okay for us to attack Israel because Schumer himself is attacking Israel. He's your own teammate. He's your own guy. And the reason they're doing this now, I suspect, your guess is as good as mine, but it's a last-ditch effort to prevent an invasion into Rafah. See, this is the invasion into Rafah. They know, hopefully, and I'm still skeptical. I've been skeptical from day one. Will Israel be able to carry out the job to the finish line? Will they be able to totally dismantle Hamas? They're under enormous pressure. Now they're talking about using weapons and aid as leverage against Israel. Schumer's talked about that. Biden has talked about that. So I have no idea what, you know, if the Israeli resources are depleting and if they're going to require outside assistance. America can exert a lot of pressure on Israel. So they're terrified. The Democrats are terrified of an invasion into Rafah. But without invading Rafah, we know that there's no way to dismantle Hamas. So it's been my fear from day one. Israel and Netanyahu, they seem very, very firm and steadfast. I hope that's real. Hope they don't cave in. But there are two strategies here, I have to believe, amongst Schumer. Number one, he's trying to put pressure on Bibi not to invade Rafah. That's a long shot, obviously. But you have to realize, what they keep talking about is how Netanyahu has a weak coalition and there's going to be, you know, of course, Benny Gantz came and visited the United States, and Netanyahu was livid about that. And they're trying to make Netanyahu be afraid that he's going to lose his coalition is going to fall apart. And that if he embraces Biden and the Democrats and caves into a ceasefire, that'll help strengthen his coalition. It seems like a real long shot, but that is like kind of what their playbook is over here, hoping for that. That's what I believe. But also, they just want to be able to say before the invasion of Rafah, look, we don't support genocide. We did everything possible. That Netanyahu, he's a rogue right-wing radical. But again, all Schumer cares about really is staying in power until now, until the October 7th. He knew that he was safe in New York State. He knew that he safely had the Jewish vote locked up. But like I said, the Muslim base and so many Democrats are exerting enormous pressure, and Schumer wants to keep the Senate in Democrat hands. So now he's got to pander to them. And like I said, I suspect many secular Jews will still support the Democrat Party. It's unconscionable. It is outrageous to me because Democrat Party has basically become a mouthpiece for Palestinian terror. And Schumer, in his speech, he threatened to use U.S. aid and weapons deliveries as leverage to interfere with Israeli politics. How dare he? How dare a United States senator threaten to withhold funding to Israel, to any country, but especially, let alone America's number one democratic ally, the number one democracy and the only democracy in the Middle East, and America's number one ally in the Middle East. Meanwhile, on the same day, the Biden administration imposed sanctions on three more Israeli farmers. They're accusing them of extremist secular violence. This whole story is so bogus. They're accusing these three farmers of seeking to undermine the national security and foreign policy objectives of the United States, including the viability of a two-state solution. So we got more sanctions. Again, these sanctions, all they are is they're literally smoke and mirrors. They're fake. They're real because they're real. But in other words, the premise of it is they're trying to come up sanctioning Israel, sanctioning Israeli farmers. Again, it's just a play to pander to the radical left and to the Muslim voters. Meanwhile, the same week that all this is going on, Biden hands Iran another $10 billion. Biden is sanctioning Israeli farmers. This tells you everything you need to know about the Biden administration. What a close friend of Israel. What a close ally, somebody they can rely on. The same week that Biden imposes new sanctions, they've already had sanctions on these extremist Israeli settlers, and Schumer gets up and makes this vicious speech, Biden lifted sanctions on Iran. There's a sanctions waiver. He renewed a waiver on sanctions, and that's going to allow another $10 billion into Iran. So putting all else aside, Iran, who supports Hamas, they're still holding Americans hostage right now as we speak. How does any American citizen accept this, that Biden is handing them billions and billions of dollars after he's already given them like nearly $100 billion? And why? As a reward for basically developing a nuclear weapon. It's really, really despicable and sickening. And like I said, Biden reaffirmed Schumer's comments on Friday and basically admitted that the White House was given a heads up, which to me means they clearly coordinated it with the White House. They wouldn't have done otherwise. So like I said many times, on October 6th, the day before Shmini Atzeres, there was peace. Israel was not attacking anybody. There was peace in the Middle East, thanks to, in large part, to President Trump and the Abraham Accords. Israel was at peace with the Saudis. It wasn't official, but everybody knew it. Wink, wink, under the radar. Israel was at peace with Bahrain, who now, thanks to Biden, is going to be drilling for a lot of oil. Israel was at peace with the UAE. I mean, there was a historic peace agreement in place, and nobody cared. The Palestinians were a joke. The two-state solution was a punchline. But then comes the horrific, horrific, unspeakable massacre. And now let's reward them. Now it's all about a two-state solution, and Israelis are the ones committing genocide. It is an alternate reality. They are living in an alternate reality, and it's really, really terrifying, chilling. And finally, before we move on here, Eli Cohen, the Israeli foreign minister, he condemned the Biden's reports of growing settler violence as an anti-Semitic blood libel and a lie disconnected from reality. But again, they're grasping at straws, Biden. It's as simple as that. All right, Biden is losing support, I mean big time, amongst black and Hispanic voters. You got to listen to these numbers. These are staggering poll numbers, and it's not just one. Multiple polls are trending in the same direction. Remember, in 2020, Biden carried 87% of the black vote and 65% of the Latino vote. Remember, Biden the racist, he said that if you don't vote for him in 2020, he said, then you're not black. Well, I think the blacks don't really care about that one bit anymore. And now Biden lost white voters 58 to 41%. Biden carried 41% white voters. Trump had 58%. But in 2020, Biden had 87% of the black vote, 65% of the Latino vote. Now, multiple polls show that Biden's support among minority voters is collapsing. USA Today poll shows that blacks now just 63% of the black vote, which is historically low, which is shockingly low. 63% of the black vote. According to the New York Times, Biden has 66% of the black vote. Now, the Latino vote is much, much worse. Both of those polls show that Trump is actually winning in the Latino vote. According to the New York Times poll, Trump has a 46% to 40% advantage over Biden in the New York Times poll amongst Latinos, Hispanic voters. And it's not just Biden. Here's what's interesting. You say, well, it's just Biden. And that would be obviously very, very damaging. But what if Biden gets replaced? Well, believe it or not, it's the Democrat Party in general. There's a Gallup poll that tracks party identification amongst blacks and Hispanics. And the trend is that blacks and Latinos are both trending away, are both shifting, becoming Republicans. In 2020, an overwhelming 77% of blacks were identified as Democrats, according to Gallup, and just 11% said they were Republican. Now, according to Gallup, blacks said 66% of blacks are Democrats, 19% are Republican. So again, it's still overwhelmingly Democrat, but again, the margins are very slim here. The Democrats need every vote they can get. And when you see such a dramatic and significant number of blacks that are abandoning the Democrat Party and shifting to Republican and abandoning Biden for Trump because they realize what's going on, they realize how miserable their lives are, that is huge. I mean, that is just phenomenally just a bombshell. And amongst Latinos in 2020, 57% identified as Democrats, 29% as Republicans. Now, according to Gallup, just 47% of Latinos identify as Democrats and 35% of Latinos identify as Republicans. So these are not just isolated trends. These are not just random. These are very, very significant trends. This is the type of margin. If Biden loses 10-20% of the black and Latino vote to Trump, I mean, that could literally shift the election, assuming no cheating and no rigging and no shenanigans. And it turns out the number one reason is the two big reasons are the economy and the border, but the economy is the big one. Because guess what? Bidenomics, it has not been good for minorities. The people hurt by Biden's economy more than anybody else are low-income Americans and especially minorities. See, these whack jobs on MSNBC and CNN who keep trying to say the economy's so good, why are voters why do they have such a negative view of the economy and of Biden's hand in the economy? It's so good. And then they quote these bogus GDP numbers and the stock market. And look, regardless whether that's actually accurate or not, reflects the economy, whether there are strong key indicators, I don't even care. Because GDP numbers don't put food on the table. GDP numbers don't pay your rent. GDP numbers don't pay your car insurance and all the other crazy expenses out there. And don't keep Dollar Tree open when Dollar Trees are shutting down and raising their prices to $1.25. Very few minority families actually own any stocks. So MSNBC, they can go and tout the Biden stock market, which it always goes up and down. Every president has ups and downs in the stock market, but they can go and tout GDP and the stock market. Guess what? Inflation, rent, food, groceries, gas. I mean, these, you know, energy prices, these prices are out of control. The blacks and Hispanics are feeling it more than ever. These are not stupid people, and they know that it's Biden's fault. Who else's fault? What are you going to do? You're going to still blame Trump? You're going to blame Putin? They're not buying it. Bidenomics has delivered to minority voters the highest food prices in 30 years, unaffordable rents, and record high credit card debt. And speaking of which, the Democrat Party is a racist party. The Democrat Party, they are anti, not only are, you know, the politicians, Democrat politicians, everything is viewed in the lens of race. They feel superior to blacks and Hispanics. You see it in the way they talk. I'll get to that in a second. But their policies actually are designed to hurt and to suppress minority voters. That's their whole key to their success. The whole Democrat Party, their whole doctrine relies on there being a crisis, and that the main crisis is inequity. So if blacks and Hispanics would become prosperous, right? If they would really become, you know, support themselves and hold down good high paying jobs, if there would be prosperity in the black and Hispanic and minority community, the Democrat Party would be out of a job. The Democrat Party would literally lose its entire premise for existence. So their whole policies are designed to be racist policies. That's the big secret that the media never talks about. But I want to read you a quote here. Newsweek's the editor of Newsweek's opinion section. Newsweek has, it's funny, their Newsweek is a very liberal magazine. But their opinion section has kind of been trending conservative the last few years, which is fascinating. But the editor is pretty conservative. It's a woman named Batya Sargon. And she actually tweeted about this just the other day. She wrote, quote, "I was once pretty woke. I get asked a lot what started my unwokening. It was a 2018 Yale study that found that white liberals, unlike white conservatives, dumbed down their vocabulary when talking to people of color. And I remember thinking, are we calling them, and we're calling them the racists. We're calling them," meaning at the time she was a leftist, she was a Democrat, she was a liberal. And there was a Yale study, and the Yale study found that liberals dumb down their vocabulary when they speak to minorities. Conservatives do not. And she's like, wow, one second. But we always accuse the conservatives of being racist, and that's what woke her up, so to speak. But that's what, you know, her awakening was, and she came to realize what we've been talking about for years, which is the Democrats are the real racists. They look down on blacks. They look down on Hispanics. If you ever hear Biden talk about, number one, they notice it, okay? It's every conversation they have. Oh, this person's black, this person's Hispanic, people of color. They're obsessed with color. I don't talk about that. I don't think that way. I'm not wired that way. I don't look at people and say, oh, he's black, he's Hispanic, you know, he's this, he's that. I just don't label people. I don't judge. That's just not how my mind works. But Biden, he's condescending. He feels superior. He looks at them as inferior. It's a prerequisite to being a Democrat. By the way, why do they support quotas? Why do they always say, well, blacks need government assistance? They say, well, you want blacks to work, you're a racist if you want blacks to work. Why is it racist to want blacks to work? Because they don't think that blacks can hold down a job. They don't think that blacks can support themselves. They think you need, if you don't basically artificially help blacks using DEI and affirmative action and all these government programs, then you're a racist. Why? Because their whole belief is, well, blacks cannot fend for themselves. That's the message they keep instilling into these black people. And remember, voter ID laws are racist. Work requirements to get food stamps are racist. That's their whole doctrine, is blacks, Hispanics, they cannot fend for themselves. It's egregious. All right, two big wins for Trump in the court, in his criminal trials. And Andrew Weissman. Andrew Weissman is the pit bull. He was the architect of the Mueller investigation. Okay, he despises Trump, and he is on MSNBC whining about the fact, having a meltdown. Andrew Weissman literally having a meltdown. So again, there's four criminal trials here that, of course, that Trump has been charged with, like 100 and however many counts, whatever. I lost track, but over 100, I think, felony charges. And these criminal trials are all imploding. I'm going to try to give you an update here of all four criminal trials, because there have been developments. All four cases are suffering from massive delays, and most of them are likely not going to have a verdict. Even if they begin before Election Day, there will not be a verdict before Election Day, or at least three out of the four. And that is huge. Obviously, that itself is a huge win for Trump. But in addition, some of these trials may not actually even ever happen. And the only one that may have a verdict before Election Day, and even that's up in the air, is the Alvin Bragg trial in New York City. That's the, you know, campaign finance trial, election interference trial. That is by far the weakest trial. Trump almost wants that one to happen because he's almost guaranteed to be acquitted. You never know when you're dealing with a New York jury, but it really by far is the weakest case. And that's really the only one that's on a timeline here. And even that one's been delayed. Meanwhile, the Georgia trial and the classified document trial, those are both imploding. Here are the details in the classified document case, and that was one of Trump's big wins this week. Trump's lawyers had two motions to dismiss the entire case. They wanted the entire case thrown out. And by the way, the judge in the classified documents trial, she was actually appointed by Trump. This is Eileen Cannon. She was appointed by Trump, and she's been very friendly. She's been very fair. You know, the Democrats claim, the media claims, oh, she's been favorable toward Trump. No, she has not. She's actually just been fair. The media is not used to that. So they had two motions to dismiss this trial. Number one, the statute that Trump is charged with, they're saying, is unconstitutionally vague. And number two, they say that due to the Presidential Records Act, Trump, as president, had the discretion to determine which documents belonged to the government and which were personal. So he actually could decide which documents he was allowed to take home. So she basically denied both of those motions. And that sounds like it's a loss for Trump, but it's not. Even Andrew Weissman admitted this. Those are wins for Trump. There are two ways to deny it. She could deny both motions and say they're denied. I think it's called with prejudice, which means that they're permanently denied. You cannot bring those up again. She said, no. Don't bring those up now. Bring them up at trial. She said they'd be better off being brought up with trial once there's already a jury selected. So Andrew Weissman, he actually called this the worst possible outcome for prosecutors because he says what she's really telling them is, listen, I'm not deciding on this now. Let's kick it down the road and let's see what happens once there's a jury involved. And so that's actually a big loss for Jack Smith. And she's telling Trump lawyers that she actually may delay the case after the jury is chosen. She left it hanging. So that's a big win for Trump. And she has not yet set a date for the trial. So Trump lawyers are saying, let's make the trial in 2025. Like I said, Eileen Cannon is a Trump appointee. She's being fair. And this trial may never happen. If it does happen, it may happen after Election Day. So we'll keep an eye on that. But that was a big win for Trump that she basically said, listen, wait, bring this up after we have a jury in place. Then the Georgia trial, a bombshell ruling, Judge Scott McAfee, he actually basically forced out Nathan Wade, who was the special counsel in that case. He said that either DA Fannie Willis has to step down, and basically that would mean her whole office had to step down, the whole Fulton County DA's office, or special counsel Nathan Wade. This is, of course, the election interference counsel in the Georgia election. So Nathan Wade has responded by stepping down. That is a huge blow. I mean, that whole case, that whole Georgia case is just riddled with scandal. The judge slammed Fannie Willis. And amazingly, get this, this same judge, Scott McAfee, who actually forced Nathan Wade to step off the case, he's donated to Fannie Willis's campaign. He's actually a donor to Fannie Willis's campaign. So which side do you think he's on? And he should have recused himself, by the way. And yet he still blasted them for prosecutorial misconduct, and he forced Wade to step down despite the fact that he's a donor. That tells you how bad the situation there really is that somebody who clearly is in the tank for Fannie Willis still rebuked her so much. I mean, it's just these people are a total disgrace. So here's where the four trials stand. The January 6th trial, that is delayed because the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments April 25th about whether Trump is immune from prosecution for any events related to January 6th because he was acting in his capacity as president. So there's no way that case is going to be decided or probably even go to trial. First, the Supreme Court has to hear the arguments. Then, of course, they're going to hand down a decision weeks later. And then they've got to set a trial date. By the way, Eileen Cannon in the classified documents scandal has not yet set a trial date. So this could be a very long time. Meanwhile, the Alvin Bragg trial, as I said, that may happen in May or June, the campaign finance violation, but that's a very, very weak case. The Georgia trial, which has been a fiasco, it's had major delays. It has 15 defendants, and now it needs a new lead prosecutor. So I cannot imagine that that's going to happen before Election Day. Now, so things are really looking bright here. And the classified document scandal case, that's, like I said, there's a judge that's actually being fair to Trump, and that case has a lot of weaknesses. So unlikely anything will happen in that case before Election Day. It's hitting a lot of delays. So things are looking very bright. Remember when Trump was indicted, and is he going to be in jail, and things were looking very bleak? Well, Trump's lawyers are very shrewd, and things are looking way, way brighter than we ever imagined in all these four trials. Now, no guarantees, of course, and the Democrats have a lot of tricks up their sleeve, but it's as good as we could have ever imagined once he was indicted. All right, Biden is giving $500 million in loan guarantees to launch an oil drilling project in Bahrain. Can't make this stuff up. The government-run U.S. Export-Import Bank, it approved a $500 million loan guarantee for oil and gas development in Bahrain. That's according to Bloomberg News. It shows that Biden wants to release the most restrictive offshore oil and gas leasing schedule in American history and cancel. Here's what happened. This week, the last few weeks, Biden has decided to be extremely restrictive on U.S. drilling, oil and gas drilling, and he has canceled 7 oil and gas leases in Alaska, which were already previously issued, but now they reneged and they canceled them because he's trying to crush domestic oil production, as we know he's been trying to do since he took office. But meanwhile, like I said, he's offering a $500 million loan guarantee to Bahrain to do oil and gas drilling. And Bernie Sanders, a bunch of Democrats in Congress, including Bernie Sanders, wrote a letter to this Export-Import Bank imploring them, please do not move forward with $100 million of that loan guarantee because it could negatively affect the climate. And that's the hypocrisy of the Democrats. You know, Biden, he claims to, you know, he shuts down oil and gas drilling, fracking and all that stuff. A lot of Democrats do in America because they say it's bad for the climate. Well, what ends up happening? That stuff still ends up getting drilled, but it happens, it's outsourced. It's outsourced where? To the Middle East. It's outsourced to the Arab countries. It's outsourced to China, to Russia, and they're the ones that do the drilling, and India, they do it in a way that's much more harmful to the climate. The best possible scenario would be to allow it to happen in the United States. It's going to happen anyway. The climate's the climate. It's not like, well, it only hurts the climate over those countries, not over our country. They care about the entire climate, and everybody, of course, affects everybody else. So that's the hypocrisy. Meanwhile, so like I said, Biden, he has actually shut down. He has imposed major, major restrictions on oil and drilling, lease cancellations in Alaska. They've moved to take millions of acres of federal lands off the table for oil and gas activity, restricting offshore leasing all over the place. So now there's a report out. Democrats keep saying, no, Biden's, that's a lie. That's fake news. They keep saying that U.S. oil production hit record levels in 2023. That is true. That actually is a fact. But experts are saying, at least according to the publications I'm reading, which are conservative publications, obviously, experts say that it's been despite Biden, not because of Biden, because what happens is Biden has done everything possible to shut down oil and gas drilling, and he's done it. He's canceled leases. They've slow walked any kind of new leases, new projects. They've basically tried to cancel as much as possible federal lands, oil and gas drilling. So Biden has shut it down as much as possible. But so why is there this growth? It's taken place on state and private lands. Biden, obviously, it's out of his jurisdiction. He cannot control all the drilling on state and private lands. So those statistics, that data that they keep touting, oh, under Biden, oil production is at record levels. That's despite Biden, not because of Biden. The CIA their new text messages have surfaced showing that the CIA deployed personnel to the Capitol on January 6, 2021. This is a bombshell. This is egregious. This is being ignored by the mainstream media. We got these text messages through a FOIA request by Judicial Watch, the watchdog agency, and they had a Freedom of Information Act request demanding to see text messages by the CIA from January 6th. Now, what's amazing is that Judicial Watch, the DOJ, refused to they kept making the Judicial Watch kept submitting these FOIA requests to the DOJ asking for text messages, but the DOJ kept refusing. Finally, Judicial Watch filed a lawsuit, and then magic, the DOJ handed over documents from Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the ATF, including text messages to or from CIA agents, and the CIA actually deployed agents to the Capitol where the protests were taking place on January 6th. Now, the CIA, again, we've told you, we know that a lot of these government agencies, the deep state, clearly conspired to create the January 6th Capitol riots. I mean, it is indisputable. There is just a wealth of evidence. But the CIA had no business being anywhere near the Capitol. The CIA, all they're empowered to do is to spy on foreign operatives, okay? They cannot spy. That does not include MAGA conservatives and Trump supporters, okay? But the CIA deployed personnel to the Capitol on January 6th. We have the text messages to prove it after the DOJ tried to hide these text messages. They're supposed to spy on foreign operatives, but then we're supposed to believe that there's no deep state. The Judicial Watch's director of research, Chris Farrell, He was quoted by Salem News Channel's America First, quote, "We have the same questions you do. What is a national intelligence collection agency whose mission is overseas doing operating domestically with law enforcement at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th? And finally, in Chicago, there is an outbreak of measles right now. Now, I don't want to get anybody panicky, and it sounds like it's not a huge outbreak at this point, but there is an outbreak of measles. Now, aren't people supposed to be vaccinated against measles? You may wonder. It's not, you know, it's not legally mandated, but most people are. Well, you'll never guess where the outbreak of measles originated. It originated, no, not in a market in Wuhan. It originated in a migrant shelter. Okay? These illegals are spreading measles and other diseases. You don't hear Biden talking about this, of course. He only cares about Americans spreading COVID. Okay, these illegals are obviously unvaccinated. They're letting the United States. I mean, you have millions of illegals in the United States, and most of them are unvaccinated. So multiple cases of measles have been identified in a migrant shelter in Chicago. Remember all the masks? They're still wearing masks. People are literally still wearing masks outdoors. They're insane. Remember the vaccine mandates. Remember, Democrats, they don't like when people spread disease. They're willing to take away all sorts of freedoms when we spread disease, unless you're illegal. If you're illegal and you're not vaccinated, they welcome you into the country. They embrace you, and you can spread whatever disease you want. All right, that's going to do it on this very, very busy Sunday, and we will see you next time.